West Ridley. You play Pana Lush Uno in the building. This is No Jumper, and I got with me a seminal LA rap legend. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say it from, I don't want to say new school, but like in between the old school and the current generation.
Like MySpace days.
The MySpace well,
that's
era.
When it, that's when it first sprouted, yep.
Right. Self-provoked.
Word.
The 818's own. What's good with you, man?
Man, I'm chilling right here getting used to the interview life because it's been a minute.
Yeah. You've always been someone that kind of lets the art speak for itself, I find.
Yeah, unless I'm drunk and on alive. Yeah.
So going back to the mid-2000s, you were like in high school, right? And
yeah, I was about, I'll say 16 years old when I dropped my first, 15 or 16 when I dropped my first song on MySpace.
And were you already involved in graffiti at that time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. So describe, what's the origins in the graph world like?
Well, I grew up just looking up to like a lot of writers, like from MSK, KOG, like I was in the Valley, so Versus was my favorite writer back in the day. And then from there, so I started doing it myself, started meeting people in high school or even from middle school, because I think even middle school I started writing a little bit.
Man.
And then, got a few people together, started a crew, you know, that till this day is still active and stuff. So, yeah, man, it started from there. And then having eyes on me through the graffiti world kind of like was a bridge with the music world. So it kind of helped out during those days. And also when I first came out, it was very rare for an independent artist to have a YouTube music video.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my homie was filming it with like a little black and white camera and and then we dropped and it was like a big deal back in the day. It's like, oh, these, how do they drop a music video? Like, because only industry artists were dropping, or not as many, and like I said, independent artists were dropping like that.
And is this like prior to On a High Note, or is that
before On a High Note? Yeah,
so you were just dropping tracks. What was your first, like, when you're still in high school and you're kind of known for bombing at this point, and your crew's getting some love, getting up and all that?
Yeah.
When you were like, you know, when I grew up, there's a thin line between graffiti and gangbanging. And even if you get into it for catching spots and all that, you know, there's like a turf element that comes into play. Were you affected by that at all?
100%. Some people even call this tag bangers for a little while, you know, because there's beef, certain happens, knives get pulled, guns get pulled, like in certain, not saying anything happened, but things happen and there's certain consequences. And yeah, and we even got like kind of, we started popping up in radars of people who were strictly gangbanging, you know?
Right. And like, and that's something that really happened like back in the day for me and like my homies. It always started as graffiti and just trying to catch spots. And yeah, we might've been, you know, doing our little hustling, selling whatever we was doing and boosting and all that. But it was about just getting known, getting fame, catching spots. But then if you're tagging in certain neighborhoods that are gang turf, then it becomes a whole other issue. And then you kind of got to band together and the stakes get higher.
Yeah. And then back in the day, that type of shit was glorified, right? So we felt like, oh, we felt tough. We had like a little ego to us. We caused problems too, and we weren't saints. So it was an interesting time.
And when during that trajectory did you realize, I want to express myself on the mic and start rapping?
Well, at that age, I was purely ego driven. So when I started realizing I was getting more attention making music than graffiti, I just started focusing on that more. And I kind of integrated the both too.
But what even compelled you to start? When did you realize that you could rap and all that?
I would freestyle. I would skateboard and I would freestyle cypher. And then one homie, shout out 8th Kind, Freddie G, he pulled up. And he's like, oh, I record. And I upload my music on MySpace. And I'm like, let me hear this. And I heard it and my mind was blown because I was like, oh, you record yourself and whatever. So he invited me to his pad. And that's really when it all started.
Now, the Valley, you're from, like, what part of the Valley are you from?
Sun Valley. 91352.
And that's a crazy part of the Valley that people don't really know much about. Like, there wasn't really too many examples of rappers that were popping before you out there, like, out there, was there?
You know what? I gotta give homie his flowers, MC Germ. There was an artist that was popping before I was, like, popping. Like, and I kind of admired homie at the time, too. he had a song called What If I Blow Up that I feel like a lot of people my age group would be like, oh, if they remember that song here, they'll be like, yo.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know what? That's how I met Severe. I hella admire Severe at that time frame too, because he was making music with Jerm, and I thought they were both dope. Still are. But yeah, so like that's how I actually met Severe, who is a Baby Franco now.
Right.
I know you interviewed him.
Of course. Yeah. One of my close homies. Hell yeah. Yeah, great artist. I definitely want to get into all that in the form, but I'm always curious, like, so Sun Valley, that's where like Circus Liquor is at, right?
That's North Hollywood.
But that's like near the kind of the border.
Probably like a five minute drive up. Okay. Vineland. Yeah.
Okay. How would you describe Sun Valley as opposed to other parts of the valley?
When I moved there, I remember there was a lot of gang activity, a lot of beef, like a lot of graffiti, a lot of it was a little more. Maybe, you know how we have childhood memories and things were crazier at the time?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what's going on right here, but I felt like it was a little more active back then.
Mm-hmm.
It's still active, don't get me wrong, but it's just kind of like, it's like North Hollywood. It's like not as active as L.A., but it's still got its thing going on. Got its own culture. In a sense, you know, it's very also competitive with L.A., like the Valley is like Valley-L.A. thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people from L.A. have a certain perception of the Valley and like
white girls or like some nice shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They think that the 818 is like, they think of like pornos, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they think it's like more privileged, but really the Valley, especially like when I grew up in L.A., the Valley was crazy. And I wound up, there's two things that really brought me to the Valley, because growing up in L.A., and like I'm from West LA, you don't really go to the Valley when you're like in high school and stuff like that. There's no real reason to go over the hill like that. But there's two things that brought me over. One was I wound up getting expelled and banned from all LAUSD schools. So the high school I graduated from was in like the Sherman Oaks, Van Nuys border. So I wound up going to, and when I was out there, I met a bunch of kids and started functioning.
Was it private?
It was called Bridges Academy, and it was, it's basically like, it's a charter school, and it was basically like, if your parents care about you enough, they'll try to get you to go there so you can get a high school diploma. It was for, at the time, there's an element of like special kids being there, like, you know, kids on the spectrum and things like that, or kids on medication. And then now that school is pretty much all that. And the crazy thing is where the school is at, it was on Burbank and Sepulveda. It used to be a dentist office and now it's a dispensary. And the crazy thing was, I was like, damn, like, I think it became a dispensary in like 2015 or something, and I was like, y'all late to this, because I was selling weed there 15 years ago, like, but yeah, you feel me? Like,
I know exactly what area you're talking about.
Yeah. You've probably seen that dispensary and all that. So
yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
So me being out there, that was like, I met kids from all over, from Canoga Park, from Van Nuys, from Pacoima and all that. So I kind of like became, and I was messing with a girl from Taft. So it's like, I'm all over the place so I'm like, hella homies from NoHo and all that. Like,
yeah.
So then it's like, the Valley was active. It was damn near like more active than a lot of parts of LA at that time. It was
certain areas for sure.
Certain areas.
Van Nuys was always active. I heard Canoga Park is active.
Canoga Park
was
crazy. Yeah. Panorama City,
Pacoima,
Tujunga, like all that. Yeah. There's like, like NoHo, like every block's a different crew or gang. It was like, it was insane. But the other thing that brought me over there was the Basement. And like the Basement.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Seminal part of LA hip hop history.
Yeah. Shout out Nat.
Shout out Nat.
Well, I think she was the latest owner.
Yeah.
Of it,
I think
right?
The dude was named Aaron before her. The guy's name. There's like a couple owners before.
No, that's what's up. There's a lot of history in that shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, not only were there rap battles there and hip hop shows, but they were, you could buy streakers and cans and all that. Montana's.
That was a spot. I used to freestyle battle there. I shouldn't even have said that because they're so cringe. I used to do a lot of things out there. I used to freestyle.
I remember the battle. I remember the battles.
Disaster actually judged one once, and I remember
the Malathion joint.
Yeah, but there was another clip I remember when I was little. I held to heart because I remember like he judged it, and he was like, he like was giving me props because I did good on that round. I rarely did good at the time, but. Yeah, and I remember he was like, yo, I like you, kid. And I remember I was like, oh,
what did you feel like I always ask people from the Valley this, like interviewing Hobson, interviewing Franco and all these different people. I always ask, what do you feel is like the biggest difference between the Valle and L.A.?
Damn, man. You know what? I can't really, now that I kind of dwelled in both areas, I can't say there's too much of a difference, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, if anything, they all get along. I have my crew, we got LA cats, we got some IE cats, Valley cats, and when we get in one place, we're all like tagger graphers, hip hop heads, so we all kind of like just mixing. Yeah. So I might just kind of be, based on that perspective, not too much of a difference, but there is a for sure a barrier with the ego. Like I'm saying that like, right. I'm from LA, you're not from LA, you're from the Valley. Like these,
right.
But besides that, no, man, I feel like there's not too much of a difference.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. Like me, I live in Van Nuys right now, and to me, Van Nuys reminds me of like West LA in the 90s, like before it got super gentrified and most of like the like Chicano Latino families were pushed out and stuff. It still has that culture way more prevalent and things like that. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, my next door neighbors have a bunch of roosters and all that. Oh, so okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's
no, for sure. There's those areas in the Valley for sure. Like yeah. Sun Valley, if you go by like the Garmo and like certain areas by but yeah, it got its areas, the Roosters.
You feel me?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And I'm like right off a major street. I'm like two blocks off a major street, and still it's like, but it's dope. I like that a lot. So like growing up, obviously you was involved in like the crew tag banging type life. Did you get in a lot of trouble, or were you, you seem like a smart, I know you're an incredibly smart dude. Like, were you getting in trouble a lot, or what was that like?
Yeah, I've got my pad rated by Burbank PD. I got my pad rated by PD, a police department, when I was 17. I got a lot of fights, of course, comes with it. Yeah, bro, I was doing billboards. I was fucking, like, I remember getting stuck on billboards because fucking cops pulled over to get tacos at taco stands, and I'm laying on a billboard, like, for 30 minutes to, waiting for this to finish eating. The, like, so I definitely have my stories. Like, I got a vault of them, for sure.
Did you, so, I mean... Are you able to talk about the police rating thing, or?
Yeah, I just kind of rephrased that. I didn't want to emphasize on Burbank PD, yeah. But yeah, I said it already.
I mean, it's so. Already, it's like yeah. Way past what happened. Like, I think that's, it sounds like an interesting story.
Yeah, they raided my pad. I was at a party, and then we got into it. Me and two homies got into it with like 5-6 people, whatever. My homie gets cracked in the head with a skateboard. I thought this fool was like fucking dead because he was like fucking bleeding, whatever. So I just like stay with him. Cops pull up, they arrest us, they put me in the back of the whip, they take my phone with me. They never gave me my phone back after that whole altercation. They just took me and whatever. They didn't give me my phone back, so I guess while they had it, they were looking through my shit. And it was I had like the Verizon T phone or whatever. That
right.
Yeah. So they saw my pictures and shit, and they're like, "Yo, yeah." They just raided my pad, and they're like,
"So like on vandalism, basically, like yeah."
Yeah, they were trying to charge me for LA property, Burbank City property, and LA. Proper. So like they're trying to fuck me, you know, like,
right?
Yeah,
and then, Burbank don't play.
That's why I didn't even want to say that.
Yeah,
bro, because they're like, and they remember, like it's weird, like they, yeah. Like, I shout out Burbank, I love Burbank, Burbank PD. Shout out to y'all cool. yeah, I learned my lesson and shit, you know. So.
Yeah.
Well, not really, actually. Oh.
Come on, right, you so, on no jumper.
After that shit happened, they got my pad got raided and shit, right? I was living with my parents. I was like, yeah, 16 or 17, I think. The next day, I sneak out my pad. My parents are like, yo, fuck that. We're in a fucking... They had ADT systems to try to keep me in the house, not from keep burglars out, whatever. So
right.
I end up fucking sneaking out because I would disable it or fucking whatever. I would sneak out, and then I ended up getting stranded because three of the homies I went painting with got caught. And I was like, I got away, and I hopped into a backyard, whatever. And this is before all the homies... I was in high school. This is before all the homies had cars and shit, you know? Mm-hmm. So... Who'd I call? Like, I was like, yo, I'm stranded. No one's picking up. I call my mom's at like fucking 3:30 in the morning. Like, hey, I'm stranded right here on Zelza by the fucking 118, I think. Right. Yeah. 118 freeway. And then my parents were like fed up. They like didn't know what to do no more. Because they're like, yo, the pad got raided yesterday, dick. And you're right here. Fucking
the talk. Next day.
They're literally next day. Like, I'm not even like not 2 days, not 3 days, like the next day. You know, so they're like, yo, like, what's
you're
wrong?
Supposed to be in the house. Why aren't you in your room? Like, yeah.
I was bad. And like to the point where my parents started asking like school systems for help, you know? They're like, yo, like they thought they couldn't do it by themselves no more. She said, so I was hella fucking like, dude, I went to court. I remember my mom crying because they were trying to like give me options, like probation, house, whatever. And then pretty much I was in the court pretty much saying, like, yo, like, I'm down to go to juvie, like, to get it over with quick. Right. But my intention, my mom knew what I was trying to go recruit in there or meet people in there. Like, I was just stupid ambitious.
You were like, so you were really trying to push the line.
Oh, yeah, bro. Like, I told you, like, when I was super, I have a, how do I say, obsessive personality. When I really am onto something or like something, research something, whatever, I'm just fully there. You feel me? So that's how I was in that stage of my life.
This fool was trying to go to juvie to recruit, not for a gang.
For a fucking riding crew, bro. I know. But I think about it sometimes and I laugh. Like the homies, like I've been kicking it with the homies more lately and shit. And they always bring up memories. Like today, actually, I had a shout out my boy Gover. He reminded me when me and him chased some guy out of a yard once. And it's funny because we kind of got into like a little situation, let's say like a couple days ago. Everything squashes cool now, but it was funny because it was those same guys from back in the day.
Wow.
His little brother that's in, I don't know, it was like weird. It just comes around though.
Full circle.
Yeah, but it was hilarious. So. Yeah.
How would you describe your graph style?
Now compared to my homies, whack. My homies are so dope, bro. And I'm just like, yo, y'all, ew, like, I was more of a bomber. Like, right. I would throw up. So I have my style too, don't get me wrong. And I think it's dope, but compared to all the other homies and what they doing, bro, like, nah, they smoke me.
I mean, you're talking about billboards, so you're just trying to, like, get fame. You're going for visibility, like...
I was destructive, you feel me? Like, my energy was definitely more on a destructive outlet.
When I used to get up, that's what it was. It was, like, hand style and all cool, but I'm just trying to... I want you to see it.
Yeah.
You feel me? Had enough can control to just get my name up, you feel me? Whatever. Yeah, like, that's it. But.
And that was the fun part to me. Don't get me wrong, the painting at a yard is cool and shit, but to me, like, I love the fucking... When buses were, like, passing by, riding them on the bus, and the bus fucking goes... The bus drivers try to chase you. Fucking.
Right.
I used to love getting chased. I used to jack 40s. I used to steal candy boxes of like hella candy and like go sell it in the same parking lot of Ralph's and shit. And like, like, hi, this is for Polytech. I'm in the baseball team. We're trying to save up money for you. So I would like have my little story and shit, make my money and buy my weed and shit. Like, so I was always getting
chased. Go get her from day one. And your parents were together growing up?
Yeah. I have very good parents. They set very good examples for me that, you know, but I always got my attention went elsewhere.
Look at you. Now, okay, so you drop your first song on MySpace.
Yeah.
Now, I know this wasn't your first song, but there's something I want to ask about. Uh-oh. One of your oldest records.
Yeah.
And I think it's like on your YouTube channel. It's like the first video that's on there. You have a song with Busy Bone.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Busy Bone. My favorite rapper ever.
So how did that come about?
I was doing a show at the Terrence in Pasadena.
Okay.
And then I have a song where I shout out Bone Thugs and Harmony. And then some two drunk girls, ladies, they're like, oh, you know, I know like Busy Bone, that's my boo, whatever. And I'm just like, oh, word. He's like, you want to do a song with him? I'll do like, what? I'm like, I'm down. Fuck yeah, you know? She got my number, whatever. She's like, all right. I think a week passed by. I'm selling a sack, fucking some weed to somebody in the car. I remember this scenario perfectly. I get a call and then I'm like, hello? I'm like, hello, yo, like his voice, right? Super unique. And like, he's like, yo, it's Busy. I was like, what the fuck, Busy? I was like, yo, you want to do like the collab, the song, right? I'm like, fuck yeah. He's like, all right.
You're like, is this a prank call?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I was tripping. And he's like, yo, all right, this is how much I charge. And I was like, oh, bro, I'm in high school, bro. I'm selling fucking dime sacks and fucking dubs, you know? I'm like, oh, bro, like, I fucking respect you, blah, blah, blah. I don't have money like that. Like, I don't have money, you know? He's like, he asked me how much I had. And I was like, this is how much I had, which I felt like it was a ridiculous amount.
Like, I have $150, like, less.
Like I said, it's my favorite rapper, so I'm not going to go too crazy into the details, but he charged, he let me have it at a very, very low price.
Right.
And then, yeah, I took the homie Slime. We went to a studio in Reseda, and we went to, it's like some rich guy's house. Like, he had a big-ass crib, and he had a studio in the back, and we just laid it down.
A busy spot, basically, like, where he was recording it?
Yeah. And then, yeah, I came and then, I just dropped it for that. And I was fucking mind blown that he let it go. Well, I think the whole idea was I wasn't going to get the rest of it until I paid a certain amount thing. Mm-hmm. And I said I wasn't going to get it. Nothing was going to happen. The guy just gave me the track, the one that engineered it.
Right.
Fucking, the girl reached out after me asking me what happened with all that shit. And I was like, yo, like, I didn't even get the... There's more to the story, actually, now that I'm remembering. So, because I didn't even get the full files.
You just got, like, the bounce down.
Yeah, but I still paid. And I remember I got permission from the lady because I was like, yo, I don't have the rest of the money. And I don't know if she felt bad. Like, whatever. She's like, just do whatever you want with it, kind of. You know, on some dismissive shit.
Right.
And I was like, fuck, I'm fucking 17 with a fucking busy verse. I was like, I'm going to put that shit. I ain't making money off
it. So that is one of your first songs, basically.
No. So my first, I think that was 2000. That was probably like when I was recording maybe 1.5 years in.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, before I was... Man, I can't believe I forgot this shit. Or I didn't bring it up. Before Self-Provoked, I was in a... Well, I was Self-Provoked, actually. But I got into a group called Lost Angels.
Okay.
And then we started doing group stuff for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then after that... Damn, bro, my time... My memory with the time...
It's all good. We done did a lot.
Yeah, but... It's one of my... I'll say it's probably my 10th song, that Busy Bone Club.
That's still pretty early. And you probably got... 500 songs now, like.
I wish that same scenario happened later in my career.
Right.
Because one, I would have done a better verse. Because fuck, I hate that verse. One, two, I would have been more savvy with it. Like, no, I need a fully mix. I don't care how much it. Like, I'll be more business driven, more intentional. You know. So, yeah.
Now, something that it's interesting to hear you say that Busy Bone is your favorite rapper because he has a really unique, high pitch, like.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Certain delivery and certain vocal tone that nobody else has. And you have a very distinct high pitched vocal tone how did you develop that style? I mean, cause like you don't have like a baritone voice, but you don't like talk like you rap. You know what I mean? Like you're able to flip your voice in a way that's really unique and use it as an instrument. Like how did you form that style?
The homie who helped me with my voice a lot was the homie Xer.
Shouts to Xer.
Because I remember I was in a studio when I first started recording with them with the Lost Angels group. And then he's like, yo, yell, but don't yell. And I'm like, the fuck? So I kept trying. I couldn't do it. You know, like it took me a while to get it, but then I got it. And then I was like, to the point where I ran with it too much, at a point where I was doing it too. I'm like, yo, I need to maybe curve my voice down a little, make it like, whatever. Add a little more bass to it sometimes.
It was dope. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like you were.
But you know, for sure, I got to give it up to Xer because Xer kind of helped me out with finding that voice. Yeah.
That's okay. So you're putting out like after you dropped the first MySpace joint, was it instantly like, oh, this dude's dope? And were kids like from your high school and around your area like? Was it kind of spreading instantly, or?
Yes, because I was rapping a lot about my crew.
Mm-hmm.
And then my crew was like, yo, they rap this was rapping about the crew on front. You know, so it was like a little pride thing about
right.
Who's resharing it, fucking.
Nice marketing scheme.
It wasn't intentional, yeah. But not so, like, yeah.
So out the gate, you're getting love.
Yeah, for sure.
And that encouraged you to keep pushing, and then... At what point were you like, I need to make an actual album? Because this is still like, people are still buying CDs at this point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What made you, like, when was it you're like, okay, I'm gonna make a complete project?
Apples, Pens, and Lighters was my first one. And that was heavily project-wise, I think it was Infamizi, his name was at the time. He was the one that was the mind behind the project, the cover, the pictures, the video. So he
worked with Franco a lot too.
Yeah, for sure. So he was the one that kind of like saw me view it in that way. Release, oh, let's drop a project. Oh, we have this many songs, let's release it as that. So like I would give him credit for helping me drop my first project, Apples Pen. Oh, and he produced all obviously credit for direction, but also credit for producing. He produced that. He did like, did we do videos? I think we did like 2 videos for that project. So yeah, shouts out Infamizi, shout out, hey, he goes by 92 now.
Okay.
Yeah, David Carcamo, fucking, I don't know what he's going by now, but I just want to say his real name.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point during this whole like path did, you know, you have a legendary crew in LA hip hop that was like huge in the Valley for a long time and just on a high note, and like you're basically like the... one of the forefathers, if not the creator of that crew, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And when did that all start? Was that around that same time?
I think that was around 2012-ish or something.
So that's a little bit later.
Yeah, that was a little later.
So you're already kind of like buzzing by yourself.
Yes. Well, all of our homies kind of had something going on, like Sev, Xer, At Last at the time. It was Ono and Xer and
right.
Afe, like
Wino,
fucking Linowski, M4, he goes by Nosa now. And we've had like, yeah, everybody had their thing going on and shit. So we kind of just, I had an idea of bringing them together because there was like a little conflict at the time that was going on, and fools were like kind of morphing into their own little corners and shit.
On some grap shit or?
On some rap shit. On some, like, rap some shit. Weird fucking ego shit, you know? And I'm not being sane. I was heavily part of that too. But so I guess I just was like, yo, I approached Severe with it, the idea of creating, or Baby Franco now. I approached him
Severe,
with the
idea. Bobby Butcher, Baby yeah. Franco.
All those names. So I approached him about starting a crew. And then I had an idea of a High Note or something, like High Note, right? And I remember we were chilling at some shop that he had a homegirl work at. It's right there on fucking Laurel Canyon and Burbank or Magnolia, whatever. And then there was a billboard, and it had like it was like coins, whatever. But it said Anna something, right? And then he's like Anna, what Anna High Note or some shit like that. Mm. And I'm like. Like on a High Note, I'm like, oh, I'm like, whatever. And we've heard that shit be said before, you know.
Of course, yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm like, oh, let me fuck it. We ran with that shit. Shout out my boy, Solid. He went by Solid Visions back then. His name's Will. He created like the little logo for me and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, yeah, we just ran with it. Got everybody else in. Fucking, I hit up Exer, told him my idea with the crew, what we should do, because it was like a whole underground boom bap movement. We were doing shows.
Right.
I was throwing shows. I was paying people like fucking $150 to use their backyard for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking have the homies rock. Fucking
collect, get a keg charge, up in there.
Charge, type, huh?
Like I get a keg up
oh,
in there.
Oh yeah,
like, yeah,
hell yeah. Fucking, we were all under 21 and shit.
Yeah.
So I can, yeah, it's good times, man.
So like one of the things that I feel like is very innovative and really helped On a High Note stand out from other crews and movements at the time was y'all were really early on and just really advanced with your merch. Mm. And you had hella merch, and like for every project and every artist on the part of the crew had their own shirts and all that. Like,
yeah.
what made you, like, was that just the same hustler mentality that had you selling candy straws outside of Ralph's, or like?
Yeah, I was like, that was before I was really making that like money off streaming. You feel me? Like, so like I was like, yo, I need to make money. So to me, it was like the shows and then the merch. I was doing self-provoked merch before On a High Note merch, so I knew that shit made money. At that time I was definitely thinking about, yo, I need to make some bread because I got attention, but I'm still broke. You feel me? I'm young as fuck. I'm just rapping. Fucking, I remember the first time I got paid was at Second Street Jazz Club. You remember that
legendary
spot?
Yeah. Come on, downtown LA.
I got paid like $100 and I was so proud that night, bro.
Yeah.
And you know what? That might have been the first time I met Wino too.
Like, okay.
Yeah, so yeah.
You guys were all kind of rapping together before.
Well, I heard about the Wino on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then I reached out to him and sent him a message. He had a song called Love for the Birds. Mm-hmm. That was fucking big. That's just dope ass song. But I reached out to him. I was like, yo, I fucking fuck with you, bro. Let's meet up. We met up. Told him they're like, join this crew and shit. He didn't know anybody. So I probably kind of, yeah. And then, yeah, bro, like little by little, it was just people we kind of knew throughout time. And that's how that crew morphed.
And that's around the first time I think the first time I became aware of you, maybe like 2010, 11, around that time. Like, and I want to say it was On a High Note era, maybe so. But I remember there's a clip of you, Severe, and Reverie rapping together, like freestyling.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who are these kids? You mm-hmm. feel me? Like, and then I kind of looked into it more. I was like, damn, they got like, this whole, you guys kind of created your own scene.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
And like the boom bap was a big thing always. Like, so did you grow up around, were fools listening to more like mainstream and gangster rap, or was like boom bap just everywhere around you? What made you gravitate towards that?
I grew up on Bone Thugs, 50 Cent, Eminem, like the basic mainstream shit back in right. the day, you know? And then in high school, I met some girl, thinking like 10th grade maybe. And she put me on Atmosphere, put me on fucking Evidence, put me on Rhymesayers.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Rhymesayers, I kind of like spread out. And then I met Wino. Wino put me on Project Blowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who are these motherfuckers rapping?
Right.
Completely more like different, aggressive, like their style, they were chopping, you know? And there was this whole like theory about Bone Thugs coming to LA, which there is a lot of like, you know, Good Life Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Know? So they were like, they would tell me shit about like Freestyle Fellowship, be like a lot of this style. You know, and I'm just like, all right. Yeah, bro, I went all over the place, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and then I'm a big R&B baby, too, bro. I put R&B okay. kind of first before hip-hop, as far as what I listen to. I wish mm-hmm. I could sing. If I could sing, I wouldn't be rapping.
What do you feel like made you stick out? Because there's a lot of, like, boom bap. The underground scene in L.A. is so saturated, but mm-hmm. you kind of, like, always stuck out. What made people gravitate towards you? And I know that's, like, a... I know you don't want to be egotistical, but, you know.
I could be real, though. I think it was my high-pitched voice. It was different. I had long hair with baggy clothes back in the day. It wasn't too, like, that much of a thing, you know. There was P-Rod, right. Obviously, like, yeah. Bar, but back in the day, like, I used to wear big baggy clothes, long hair.
You had the JNCOs? The JNCO jeans?
No.
Just, like, other baggy-ass jeans?
Oh, the ones that had a crown?
Yeah.
The logo was, like,
a crown. Yeah.
Yeah, bro, so I don't know if it was a little bit of that. The graffiti thing helped. I don't know, bro. Maybe, and also, like, I could say I have, like, a certain, back in the day, I was more wild, you feel me? More entertaining to see as, like, oh, like, this was stealing an apple and fucking recording it for a music video. This was stealing a 40, like, he's tagging in his video.
Like, it's almost like viral clickbait content before that was a concept, but you're applying it to music videos, like
and I had a video when I'm walking out of Ralph's with shit in my fucking pants and dee, 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 dee starts beeping and shit, you know? And back in the day it was a big deal. It's before, like, now we got, like, fucking weird people doing weird shit all the time,
right.
You know, like,
right.
So back then it was kind of like, oh, you stole a fucking, or what? They didn't even know what the fuck I stole. I think it was just an apple and that shit, right, because of the sticker. But yeah,
is also, like, do you feel like girls liking you a lot? Because you have, like, a, for an underground rapper, I don't even know if you still classify yourself as that, but you have, like, a pretty big female fan base. Like, Self-Provoked, like, when Self-Provoked goes live on Instagram, you see a lot of girls popping up hard eye emojis and all that. Do you feel like that was a part of your success as well? Because a lot of these rappers be kind of dusty ass ugly motherfuckers.
Honestly, maybe at that time I was, you know, at that time, maybe, like, oh, fucking cute little wild kid with long hair running around. Like, yeah, maybe, yeah, for sure.
I know you hate that about yourself, too, like.
And then I made songs also that girls like some, like, hopeless romantic shit, you know? Mm-hmm. So they would, like, listen to that. So I'm sure that helped their, like, idealize my image, you know, in their head. But, yeah, fucking maybe that helped a little bit.
You know, like, what was crazy at the time, and a lot of people would always talk about, like, in the underground world, I know it's weird to bring up, but I just got to do it. Like, she's the homegirl, too. Like, you and Rev, like, used to be, like, a couple and stuff, right?
Hell yeah.
You and Reverie and stuff.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Shouts to Rev. You know, I love Rev. She's an amazing artist, amazing person.
Super dope.
And, like, what was that kind of weird? You guys are both kind of blowing up around the same time, and you're, like, a couple?
At the time, I would lie to myself and say no. Now that I look at it, yeah, just because we both are going towards the same goals. It's a weird world, two entertainers, two things. Now I'm thinking about
it. And y'all are both super driven people, like.
Yeah, yeah. I found her when I was, I got with her when I was 18, so when I was young, you feel me? So I was still, she helped. If anything, I give a lot of props to her for helping me see things in a, because she was mature as hell, like, even for her age when I met her. So, like, she was putting me on shit at that time, too. Like, yeah, I always show love. Like, my only Europe tours are with her, two of them.
Wow.
And she took me on her tour. So, you know, so, like, the love for that girl is fucking, yeah.
And y'all, just no matter what happened, y'all still stayed cool throughout the, you know what I'm saying?
We had a little, you know, like, she wasn't fucking me for a minute, you know, yeah, understandably. But no, yeah, we squashed it. We chopped it up. Everything's cool.
That's dope. That's dope. And around what time was it, before or after On a High Note, when you and because you have, like, a lot of videos that are in the millions of views. Mm-hmm. Like, one of them, and one of the first ones that I really peeped, was you and Severe, Stay True. And to this day, I feel like that song is ill, because it's like, if anyone hasn't heard that, that's a dope record, because you really are talking about, no matter what happens, no matter how much success you get, like, you got to keep it real to your origins, essentially, and be real to yourself.
Yeah, stay grounded. Yeah, for sure.
Stay grounded and stuff. Like, was that around that same time, or, like,
when did we drop that song? I know he re-uploaded it. It reached a million or something. And then he re-uploaded it, reached a million again. Yeah, people like that song.
I think it's over two now.
Oh, shit. No, hell yeah. Damn, bro. Honestly,
That was after On a High Note started, right?
Yeah, that was when it first started. Actually, okay. Yeah, that's when it first started. Because the guy who filmed that video was the guy that created the On a High Note logo. Shout out Will, Solid Visions. I don't know what he's going by right now, but Will Daratorre.
So it's crazy, because you started, like, there's a lot of people from that scene, and on and particularly from, you know, like on a high note directly, that y'all all kind of blew up in different ways. I mean, Ono is huge right now. You feel me? First Mexican artist on Def Jam, like going crazy. I actually hosted a show for him that he headlined recently on Halloween, and it was dope to see him. I'm like, bro, you're like a whole ass superstar now. You feel me? I hadn't seen him for a long ass time.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Ollie, like the Wino had a bunch of big records, you feel me? Severe did his thing. Everybody, Xer, like the whole crew, Linowski, and you, like you really like popped off too. Is that kind of crazy to see? Like, did y'all at a certain point, was it like we just gonna go in our own directions or?
So me and all the homies, we're like fucking, we love each other. But we're fucking hard-headed, bro. And we know we all want to do it our way. We all know we want to do it in our time, you know? So it was always very hard to kind of get the whole crew in to do, like, I think we have, like, a total of probably, like, 6 tracks together. But
that's it?
Yeah.
As, like, a whole collective? A whole crew, yeah.
But, yeah, it's always been known, like, hey, we got our own thing going on. We're going to put our focus there. But we're a family. And whenever, every here and there, like, we linked up, like, 3 months ago to lay down a record, you know?
And it'll be, like, there's a lot of records where it's, like, you know, there's that one with the Wino and Xer that was super cracking. Like,
oh, Revival.
Yep. There's like I said, there's Stay True, you and Sev. Mm-hmm. So, and there's like a bunch of like little collabs between the group and like.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, and I feel like the crew even had like little webs within the crew that, you know, people who would, yeah, hell yeah.
And at a certain point, I want to say maybe like 2016, you started to evolve past the boom bap stage of your music.
Flavors.
Yeah, you feel me? Like right around that time, and you're just experimenting with different styles. You still are like, you never stopped being lyrical. You never, I feel like, were trying to like sell out or anything like that, but it was just like, you're playing with different sounds and things. Like, did you feel like when you did that, you got any backlash from like the hardcore hip hop fans?
Yeah, I actually made a skit too about it. I just took it off my YouTube actually. But yeah, 100%. Everybody was like, oh, you're selling now. Oh, you're trying to sound like everybody else. Or at that time, I think it was like that SoundCloud scene that was kind of popping. And I was fucking with a lot of that shit because it reminded me of a lot of shit I liked too, like 3-6 Mafia and shit like that. But I definitely did get a little backlash. But it did good. That time in that project, did
right.
good. A lot of people still to this day are like, yo, you need to drop something like Flavors and shit. And I'm like, maybe one day, once I get that energy.
Do you feel like just like the template of underground hip hop becomes somewhat limiting at a certain point?
Like the boom bap?
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, you just felt like creatively you needed to do something else?
Yeah, to kind of bring excitement back. And then I was kind of helped by my homie too, thought the same, and he was making some dope shit in that type of, like, you know, it all kind of made sense at the time. And then Tick Tick, to be honest, like, I want to make another song like that.
That song is fire, like, fire. That's like more like harder, you feel me? Yeah. Like, yeah.
I don't give up.
Yeah, you going at him. Now, something that I feel like is dope about you also, you coming from the school of MCing, you know, like actually rocking shows. And a lot of artists nowadays, they're rapping over their pre-recorded vocals for the whole song, not just for hooks, you know what I mean? Like, basically they're just like jumping around on stage and lip syncing, and it's like cool. Like, a lot of those shows have an incredible energy, but like, you always like kind of stood firm on the actually rapping during your shows. Like,
it makes sense for the style that I do, you know? Like, I get why some people do it, because like, it's like super heavy, the type of music they're making. It's like, I've always liked like actual vocals. Like, I respect the fuck out of a rapper when I see him on stage and he's like just straight on like the mic, no ad libs, no nothing, like just straight on the mic, and it's who's killing it. Like, who was the one that did the verses? Lox and
Dipset.
Yeah. And you could tell when fucking, why am I drawing a blank on his fucking,
Jadakiss. Yeah.
When he grabbed the mic and he's rapping raw, like, bro, that shit stands out.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's real, real different.
Yeah.
And do you feel like at a certain point because you said you're like a big R&B fan too. Do you feel like you're going to be going in that direction ever?
No, honestly, I'm kind of not making that much music consistently. I'm dropping like 2 tracks a year, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a video or something. Like, Right now, I'm trying to put my foot, understand the, I appreciate the business of it, that business aspect of it, understand, like, the behind the scenes. I don't like to show face as much no more. I've realized that. I want to get into, like, the managing and A&R side of things, you feel me? Like, okay. I've made so many connections throughout my careers. I know so many people that are in the music, in music realms that I know I couldn't collab with, but I know artists that I could plug them up. Like, if I was to get an artist and I know I could use certain resources that I never use, certain outlets, certain relationships, you know, so... That's my transitioning. So it's, my transition is kind of stepping away from making so much music. Mm. I still am, in a, like, for fun, expressing myself.
You going from Lil Wayne to Birdman?
Shit, if all goes well. But
yeah. All tree, y'all.
No, you know, I just, I love the managing aspect. Or I've been picking a lot of brains of people who manage an A&R and stuff like that. And I like what they do.
What do you look for? Like, if you were going to find an artist, what would be, like, what are you looking to, what type of artist are you looking to put on?
Well, there's two approaches, right? We could do whatever is working right now, which seems to be the formula. So I'm never against or opposed to doing that, working the angles, those angles. Also, something unique, you know, something different, something not so, like, not obvious, something that could still be integrated with whatever is out there, but still has its own, like, essence. Like, if I find something like that, like, to me, if I find somebody with a really weird voice, but just talented and they know how, and maybe they need a up on, if they're open to upping their style or upping their approach to image, you know, proposing something, a formula to somebody. And because I never want to be the guy to be like, oh, I see your vision. We got to change it though. You know, it got to be like, at least how I see it, like, I'd rather take criticism on amplifying what I already got from somebody that's going to approach me in that manner. So I feel like, I don't know, you know, I'm just thinking out loud.
I feel like there's a lot of, that was kind of interesting. You mentioned the voice thing and it's come up a few times. And like, there's a lot of people that have requested the Self-Provoked interview. Like I've got hit up several times, like you should interview Self-Provoked. And I'm like, cause especially once they saw me interview Baby Franco and Reverie and they're like, well, what's up with Self-Provoked? And like, like, yeah, that's the homie. Which I was already thinking I wanted to do it regardless. Duno was going to actually sit down with me today and interview you, but he wound up having something else to do. Like he fucks with your music. Like as well. And but I know, like, you guys all have really distinct voices. Like you, Sev, like you know,
Samir has for sure.
All you guys like have really unique voices. It's interesting that, and that's what people were saying when they were asking, like, yo, I love his voice. That would be like the number one comment I heard. But it's kind of dope. As far as like an artist to put on, here's like if what I'm looking for, if I was gonna be an A&R, and I've been saying this for like 4 or 5 years and it still hasn't happened, and I feel like it would be bigger now than ever, especially because, let me ask you this, what do you feel like, you know, every year there's like a trend in hip hop, right? What do you feel like last year, like, was the thing that was popping?
Last year, I feel like we're still kind of on.
I'm saying my thing, what I would say is women rappers. You feel me? Like, know what I'm saying? Glorilla, Ice Spice, Lotto, like all these different chicks. And they're, you know, like city girls all talking that really like raunchy sexual shit. Like there was more like girls blowing up last year as MCs than as rappers than men by far. Yeah. Like that's kind of the thing right now.
Girl voices pierce beats very, like, you know.
For
sure. And high pitch, like my I'm very aware of this shit too. Like it pierces the beat in a very different manner than a deeper voice will, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like when I hear a girl rap, that's why it's hella, it's strong, you feel me? Like
for sure. It cuts through the and that's why, like, even like Eminem had that like nasally voice at first that would cut through the mix. Really, like me, it was always difficult because I'd like have a deeper voice and it's like the same frequency as a snare, so it's difficult to mix around a snare. But if you have that high voice, you're sitting right on top of the mix. But like, so my idea and what I've been looking for, and you as an A&R, maybe you could you know, aspiring A&R, maybe you can make this happen. I want to find an L.A. West Coast version of Cardi B. And I feel like it would be but like Chicana, like a Mexican girl, like from a hood, tatted up chola, rapping like real raunchy, like, but like banged out too. That's like dope with it, with bars. Yeah, you feel me? Yeah. Like Cardi B from L.A., Mexican, banged out with bars. Like not like Dominican or Puerto Rican and shit, but like Mexican. You feel me? Yeah. Like
I feel you.
Wouldn't that be crazy? Or even Salvadorian? Like that would be super hard, I feel like.
No, that would. I see where you're going with that. I see it.
Like if Snow the Product was from L.A. and more banged out. and had like face tats. I think that would be crazy. I want to fight. If you're out there, don't even holler at me. Holler at Self-Provoked. He gonna get you right.
We'll line it up.
Something about you that I've always found interesting. You like have really unique perspectives on things like politics. Like you read a lot. You think for yourself. You're very outside the box. Like, were you always kind of like that? Is that like, it feels like you have a very rebellious perspective.
Yes, I've always, well, I got how do I say this, my veil got peeled back when, or a little bit to a degree, when I was probably 15 16. Just like kind of started figuring out like the origins of my religions and stuff like that, and how they came to be, how they became popular. Whoop-de-woo. And I was kind of like, oh shit, you know, and that shit, you know. I'm just curious with that shit, bro. I'm just like, you know, I'm obsessive. So when I start kind of finding something that makes sense, I'm like, I want to figure this out a little bit or get some insight on it as much as I can, and I'll go down that rabbit hole. But for sure, I just feel like the masses are completely like manipulated, obviously, you know, and it's a necessity and like to a degree, right? But I just feel like there is definitely some
fuck shit.
For sure. And it's not like people always want to blame politicians, government, but it's way above that. It's way above organizations. It's about like family bloodlines and certain like family crests that have been around and like prominent for so long, you know? And even like in certain organizations. It's just a bunch of stuff, you know, but interesting.
Prodigy had a line in the song, Illuminati want my mind, soul, and my body. Mm-hmm. Secret society trying to keep their eye on me.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like what you're talking about?
Well, we could go so many places with just those lines, but yeah, 100%. Like, and I'm not against people hate Freemasons. I don't hate Freemasons. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there's some corrupt ones and things like that. I'm not against Freemasonry. I actually admire and respect what they do. I admire like a lot of their history. I admire a lot of people that people would consider like controversial figures and stuff like that. But I just feel like every person is like an expression of God in their own sense, and their cornerstones to whatever their life is about, and they're applying their cornerstones to things on a societal manner if that's what their intent is. And with that being said, is like I can't really knock anybody with ideologies that I'm not in their plans for, or I'm not on their good side for. But I appreciate everything in philosophy. Yeah.
So do you kind of believe that it's like a dog eat dog world? Like, and if you're not the hunter, you're the hunted. So it's better to stay with the gun, metaphorically speaking.
It's good to be aware. So yeah, it's good not to let somebody's manipulation is only a weapon if you're unaware of it, right? So like, to me, it's like I want to disarm as many people that have certain weaponry aimed towards me, you know. So like, I rather understand like what they want, what their outlooks like. There's philosophies out there, like, or outlooks on life. We call it accelerationists, like nerd people in Silicon Valley that believe we need to integrate humanity with. And this is so open. Like, they talk about this shit very open. Like,
right.
You know how like Elon Musk is doing the Neuralink thing, like kind of step in. But
and that's essentially like, you basically like get an iPhone and plant it in your head and like.
Not that deep yet, but.
But essentially.
Yeah, right. We're kind of Yeah, we're going through some interesting times. Running the whole, I feel like there's a lot of intentional confusion they're trying to put on young kids right now, you know, with things that they need to figure out on their own when they grow up. But they're kind of pushing this agenda and this profit, putting it in little kid shows, putting in little kid
TikTok.
Books. TikTok. Dude, the TikTok algorithm is, I'm sure you're aware of this because a lot of people, everyone knows this, but like the algorithm is completely different than
right.
Here than China.
Like, right.
Over there, you go to China, you ask a little kid what they want to be, they're telling you they want to be like
an engineer.
Some crazy shit, right? Over here, you ask a fucking dumbass little kid what they want to be, and they're like, oh, a TikToker.
I want to be a YouTuber.
And it's like, fuck, we're fucked. You know, like,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of, yeah. And then a lot of people aren't on current affairs, like BRICS. Like, there's this currency, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and fucking, not Saudi Arabia, even though they just joined.
United Arab Emirates.
I forgot, but they're creating a currency that's gonna
like the euro.
Yeah, but it's a global alliance. So and this alliance occupies 52% of global population. So it's gonna throw the dollar out, but But what I'm saying is, like, important things aren't being reported on mainstream news and stuff like that. Like, if you search up BRICS on Google, I'm sure you'll find something.
Well, and that's kind of crazy, too. Like you said, like, these are countries in several different continents and different sectors, and they're very populous countries. Mm-hmm. Like you said, China, India.
South,
like,
Africa was the last.
South Africa. Yeah. Like, yeah, these are
they're big
countries.
Argentina,
you know
what I mean? Argentina just announced that they plan on joining.
Aren't you Argentinian? Yeah, that's your people right there. Yeah, congrats on the World Cup.
Come on. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, Messi, man.
That's right.
But with the Maria, all of them.
And it gets messy, apparently, with all this stuff going on. Like,
yeah, but I'm enjoying the show, man. Like I said, I don't cling on to what's right or wrong. You know, I feel like that's kind of depends what side of the coin you're on. So, like, I'm just enjoying the show and just trying to be aware so I could, like, if I got to do something with my dollars and my stacks, and I got to do something with them, you know? Fucking, they're buying all their gold back from the States because everybody's saying we're not backing. We don't have everything we're giving to Ukraine. We can't back up. You feel me? So all these countries are already aware that we don't got the fucking that much money we're putting up.
Well, and the gold standard is supposed to be what sets currency and all that. But that's why we have inflation, because we're printing more money than we actually have.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, for sure, man.
Do you feel like your pursuits of this type of knowledge kind of derailed your desire for, like, being in the spotlight and being a rapper?
100%. 100%. Yeah, that's why I don't want to be a... and I'm saying some people have that energy, and I'm telling you, that's dope. Pursue that shit. Don't ever let what I say knock anybody's. Like, but for me, it's like, I don't want to be the product. I don't want to have to, like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm right here. Hey, what's up? Okay, today we have a show. Like, I don't want to, like, have to be on tour doing 50, like, you know, while someone's getting paid at home when they're with their family and they're getting, like, I just don't. And the tour might be fun for somebody, you know, but for me, I'd rather stay at the pad and do some shit that is super introverted and isn't fun to other people. So it's just a personal, like, outlook. I'm not that guy no more.
Do you still go out a lot, or, like, not really?
Rarely. No. If I go out, I'll go out with, like, a shorty or something, or I'll go out with, like, meet up with the homies and be there for, like, an hour or two, and then you just go to do my thing. And I like to plot my week. I like to plan. I like to do weird shit, bro. I'm very big on, like, occult philosophies and occult stuff too. I like to do my, like, occult disciplines, my fasting, my meditations, my ritual work. Oh shit, weird shit that people would consider demonic because they don't understand it and they like to judge it, you know.
But that's, like, I mean, at a certain point, like you said earlier, you kind of did research into religion, and, like, it kind of made you realize the way you grew up wasn't, like,
Yeah, for sure. Like, I was scared. When I first started getting into, like, alternative or other philosophies or dogmas, religions, whatever, my subconscious mind wasn't with it. Like, I would get anxious or I'd get nervous reading this shit because I'm like, yo, am I fucking going to go to hell? Because I was, I grew up in a hella, like, fucking, I went to church on Sundays, like, until, like, middle school and shit. So I hella always had a connection with what we call, like, God or higher, whatever you want, you know?
Spirituality.
Yeah, like, I always would have conversations like that. So I was always tight as a youngster. So I feel like I was being rebellious towards those past beliefs when I was getting into new shit.
It's very interesting. Yeah. It's very interesting to see, like, this development, because so many people, if they got to a level of success and notoriety in music as you, they would want to lean into that so much and be like, yo, I'm a rap star and look at me, I'm blowing up. But you kind of got, like, a little dose of that, and you kind of were like, yo, I don't like what I have to do to sustain this.
I didn't want different lifestyle adaptions. I wanted to kind of step out of that.
So did that kind of make you lean more into the graph again? Because it's like, okay, I could still be, like, artistic?
The graph I kind of took a step back for, like, don't get me wrong, I'm still, like, involved with my homies and stuff. But as far as going out and painting, I don't do that no more. I'm kind of, like, that was my destructive expressions. I feel like I'm trying to construct right now. So I'm, like, right now I'm working on, like, I don't know if you know You Ain't Hard Fool. Shout out You Ain't Hard Fool.
That's the homies right there.
Yeah, shout out.
Shouts to You Ain't Hard Fool. Man, you might not be hard, but they the hardest account on damn Instagram. I rock with them fools. It's my
pedals. We're working on something, actually, together. We're going to start a little something. And then, so I'm doing that. I'm in the cannabis world heavy as well. And like I said, the management thing, I'm trying to, you know, plant some seeds there, get into that. And yeah, and keep doing what I enjoy, man.
That's awesome. It's kind of interesting. Like, we were talking about people that you've worked with over the years that kind of found different levels of success. Like, y'all were kind of in the mix with Fora at one point too, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it kind of crazy to see like the whole path that he went on and stuff?
Crazy? Nah. I feel like he was doing what he knew would work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like emotional shit.
Yeah. It's a different lane, but you feel me?
Yeah.
Now, as far as like, okay, a lot of the things we were just discussing is kind of along the lines of certain shit that Kanye's been talking about recently, I feel like. Do you feel like Ye's been kind of wrongly persecuted? Do you support some of his ideologies, or how do you feel about that?
He says a lot of truth, for sure. He does, and like in a very generalized manner. Like, you know, it's not, how do I say this? There's degrees to truth and everything, and some of the shit he's talking about has very high degrees of truth.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, to me, it's kind of hating, though, like, because this is like, yo, certain foods have a certain way, and they figured out, they got a certain system, you feel me? You can't hate the, like, it's like a business structure. It's like, you got to crack it, and it's hard to crack. They got it established, but it's like, to me, I'd be hating. And I obviously, like I said, I don't like to right or wrong too much, so that's why, like, I don't want to judge it, but there definitely is a lot of truth to what homie's saying. And he says more than just what the headlines are saying. He also brought up the Vatican, Rome, you know. Those are interesting topics. And they, if you look into who created a CIA and FBI, people that belong to Knights of Malta, Knights of Malta is under the Vatican. So there's certain things that if you extrapolate, like, there's, you know, and I don't want to fucking go in on this down a rabbit hole.
But it's interesting stuff.
It is definitely interesting stuff. And it is, there is a lot of truth. Like I said, he's wild and the people he's hanging out with is very polarized. And like, there is like, but even those people that are polarized, they have their truths too. And if you listen to them talk, listen to both sides talk or listen to everybody talk. That's what I do. You know, I like to, I know what the mainstream narrative is already. Everybody does. So it's like.
Well, do you feel like at this point, the way I look at it is the mainstream narrative, there's no more information because we're living in the age of information and there's so much information, whatever echo chamber mm-hmm. you kind of put yourself in the midst of, that's the information you're going to get. Like, and that's what your algorithm is going to dictate.
Exactly.
And if I watch CNN mm-hmm. or opposed to Fox, that's going to give me two different complete news sources. Or if I'm looking on InfoWars, or if I'm looking at, you feel me?
Reinforces what you're already on.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So that's where like certain, like, yeah. And that's the problem. Right. But me, like, to solve the problem is like, all right, where, what documents are they talking about? Like, okay, where is this? It's from a government website, CDC. Let me go to the actual CDC and look at the actual.
So go to the source.
Yeah. You know, instead of letting fools tell, like, cause I could come and be fucking saying some bullshit, you know, or fucking the news could come be saying some bullshit. And then like, just cause you kick it with me more than you watch news, you're going to believe me. You're like, do your own homework. But I feel like people are just lazy. Everybody just wants like their food getting dropped off at the door, which I'm guilty of too. Fucking Uber Eats. We just are very lazy and just want to like when everyone blames everything on Freemasons or Illuminati or like things like that, it's like, it's not that black and white. And it's not just like these names come from bigger organizations and saying that is just kind of dismissing the bigger picture. You know, if you blame Freemasons for everything, it's kind of like, all right, that's, it's like a scapegoat and everyone just directs their energy there and then there's nothing being solved. It's like, what's the problem? Where did the problem come from? Who created the problem? What culture? I don't know, you know? And to me, what Kanye says too, one thing too, because a lot of people are on that BLM bullshit. To me, like, you can't target racism until what Kanye finally said that I've been saying for years. There's certain people that run a certain industry that aren't the people that are the face of, right? And there's a certain,
the unseen hand.
Yeah. And there's a fucked up message being put out consistently to like people, like where it doesn't even just, it obviously that culture is contagious. It bleeds through and my whole thing is like, there's a lot of malicious intent, I feel like, with this industry that I'm trying to get into. So I'm right here talking shit, but I'm right here trying to get into. But obviously not in those levels. That's like big, that's like not A&R. That's not manager. That's not, fucking, that's shit you don't know about.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like, is it scary because now you're at a point where, you know, you were living somewhat comfortably off of your music and you were doing well and stuff. Like, now you're kind of moving into a new space where you're transitioning out of it and really kind of have for the past couple years, right? Like, you put out, what, two or three videos this 2022?
Maybe. And one was like a collab, right?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
And the year before that, about the same, you know what I mean? Like, is it kind of like scary? Like you're kind of jumping off?
No. I have a good source of income. That's okay. Not from music and all that. So I'm chilling. Yeah.
So you're financially in a place there where you could.
I'm chilling. I could fucking have a vacation. I wouldn't do it because I'm gonna lose money in it. But I'm chilling right now.
Right. You can pursue your passion and whatever the next step is.
I can read as many books as I want without losing money.
Yeah, That's right.
Be an introvert without. Yeah.
Now, for people that are interested in a lot of the stuff that you were just talking about, are there any specific authors or places that you recommend?
Well, it depends what, like, if you want to understand, like, since I'm talking about Freemasonry a lot, right? Like, if you want to understand more about Freemasonry, look into Freemason authors, Manly P. Hall, Albert Pike, even though he gets a bad rep, and I kind of see why. But there's a lot of people out there that, if you really want to know, it's a lot of boring digging, but it's still information. Manly P. Hall is a Freemason, if you want to understand a little bit more about that. Israel Regardi, if you want to understand more about occult stuff that a lot of people call demon shit or whatever. Or Kabbalion, I don't know. So there's so many books, I don't know what topic or whatever. But if someone wants to kind of get an introduction of like a philosophy I'm heavy into, it's called Hermeticism, which is a very basic philosophy. But there's a book called Kabbalion, which is very known. KYBALION. That's a really good book too.
Yeah. I think you're putting a lot of people up on game. You added some creases and some craniums. You feel me? Like,
yeah, it's a cool book.
That's very, very dope. Now, the past few years, there's definitely been like a huge rise in Latino hip hop. In particular, like there's a lot of like, you know, Chicano artists in LA blowing up, like all over the place. Like, is it kind of like, you know, you being a Latino artist in LA for several years, it's kind of cool to see where it's at. You got, you know, Money Sign Suede, you got Bravo the Bag Chaser. You got, there's so many different fools kind of going up right now in the city.
Not for real. Yeah, and it's pretty recent.
Even
right?
Like OGZ before that a little bit. Like, yeah, there's, yeah. But there's so many representatives. Yeah. Like,
no, hell yeah. It is
Swifty
crazy.
Blue, you feel me? Like, What is that? What's that kind of like? Is it cool to see? Like,
super cool to see. Yeah, and I like that also. I feel like not calling them Chicano, but there's also a Chicano side that's getting even more love now. And
right.
Because like, back then, Chicano, I feel like Chicano rappers, people didn't want to be a Chicano rapper or whatever.
Right.
So I feel like that's getting love too. And then, yeah, like you said, the other Latino rappers doing
it. I've always thought the Chicano rap was hard too, like Mr. Shadow and Diablo and all those fools, Mr. Lil One, like
Conejo.
Yeah, Conejo's fire. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, not for sure. I remember when Busy Bone, I had all his solo albums. He dropped a project with High Power.
Shouts to Busy, fool. That's my dog.
Favorite rapper of all time, GOAT, fucking, yeah.
You guys, do you ever talk to Busy anymore?
I saw him at a show. I'm pretty sure he don't remember me. But I ran into him at a show. I didn't want to be weird, so I just didn't say what's up. But
you didn't even say what's up?
No, because I'm like,
you are weird for not saying what's up.
Well, because he was like doing his thing, did a song a long time ago when I was 17, like that.
But, you'd be surprised. You might have remembered, bro. He's a cool-ass dude. But
you know what's crazy? He had a yellow notebook. Wait, do I have it in my wallet? No, I don't think I have it in my wallet anymore. But he had a lyric that I feel like he was gonna throw away because it was on the floor or whatever, and I was like, man, and it was like scribbled. He had like some bars on it and a lot of them were scribbled, so I'm like, I'm gonna take this lyric.
That's fire.
I took it out. It was a big yellow paper. But I kept it in my wallet for a long time. I found it again recently like in the stash somewhere and I put it in my wallet, but I think
That needs to be in the museum right there. You feel me?
Yeah.
So I know you talked about upcoming endeavors. What's next for Self Revoked?
Shit, bro. Fucking it's such a weird question because there's a lot. But definitely gonna be dropping some tracks every here and there. I'm actually working on something right now with the homie Nick Rodriguez.
Shouts to my boy Nick.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Dope filmmaker, dope director.
Hell yeah. Got my boy Agent Spitz directing it. You know, I'm gonna let the homie direct, get it into his creativity.
Is it gonna be porn? You doing porn? Agent Spitz, come on. That fool got his dick sucked by Ava Devine. Come on.
Oh yeah.
Don't play with him.
Oh, he has.
He was
crazy
fucking pouring
history.
Bitches before Adam. Like
he
ha- what?
He has crazy history.
Way before.
He has a crazy vault. You ever go to his house? Oh, he'll show you. He shows everybody.
Yeah, you could definitely like you can make OnlyFans damn near the vintage vault. I like that era of porn too.
Yeah, that's funny. But yeah, bro. So just drop some music every here and there. Get to know that business I'm trying to endeavor upon, the managing A&Ring, pick some more brains about that, and do what I'm doing right now with the cannabis stuff, you know?
Okay, yeah, look at you. Yeah, so. Look at you. Amazing, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Any final words? My dog, Selfie.
Shit. Nah, I think I spoke enough.
Okay, you know the vibes. Self-provoked, Lush Uno, No Jumper. Log in with us. Come on.